Go get it. Go get it. Turn and run. Turn and run. Turn and run.
The Roddy Morris Show.
Pay attention to this now. Make sure you snap those hands around.
On your home for the Buccaneers. 620 WDAE and US 1035.
You want to come out and get a kick 180 until you get out of here, okay?
Now here's the head coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Roddy Morris, and your host, TJ Reeves.
And here we are on a Monday after the first shutout for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on the road since 2003. A 21-0 blanking of the San Francisco 49ers. Well, I don't guess we got to hear about not winning in San Francisco since 1980 anymore. That's over and done with. 7-3, very much in the hunt in the AFC playoff picture. And we say hello, good evening, and congratulations to head coach Raheem Morris. You got a smile on your face. You should.
I never have to correct you, but you said AFC, NFC.
NFC playoff picture. Thank you. Yes. Some kind of playoff picture. It's a long flight coming back. But congrats on the win. That's the important thing.
I'll take any picture at this point. Thank you.
You've now had time to contemplate it, to look it over on the game tape and digest it. That was impressive. It was not easy for a lot of the game. You put it away in the fourth quarter. But, to hold them without a point, to hold them down the way that you did, you got to be pleased, thrilled.
You know, we talked about it earlier, but it's, you know, probably one of our most complete games, you know, all the way across the board, you know, offensively, you know, defensively and special teams, you know, to be able to go out there and put it together where a team doesn't enable himself to score points. That means you didn't have any major mistake on any side of the ball. So that was a good feeling. That was great for our players. And hopefully it's a learning lesson for us and helps us get better down the stretch. A
couple more overall, and then we'll kind of go back and go through the game. I keep saying this at the risk of being a broken record. Young teams are not supposed to show poise, maturity, go on the road. Why does this team continue in adverse situations to perform like a veteran team is expected to perform?
You know, I think they like it. You know, we talked about the adversity. We talked about we embrace getting booed. We do all those things we talked about before. But, you know, they're just becoming impossible to ignore. The league's starting to take notice. People are starting to take notice. And we're fun to watch. So we're enjoying that.
It looked, though, also yesterday, you could just tell expressions on your guys' faces, body language, your bench, their sideline, their expressions, their body language, night and day difference in terms of the confidence level. I'm talking about while the game was still in doubt, 7-0, 14-0. Your team looked like a confident football team that believed and body language said so. That's just more reinforcement to the job that you've done, your staff has done with your players.
Well, you know, I don't get a chance to see the other team's bench during the game. I guess that's a unique perspective that you guys can have. But, you know, I know what my sideline looks like, and they're a confident bunch, and they all know what they want to do, their plan. And our job is to go out there and play fast, hard, smart, and consistent. And that's all they talk about on the sideline. That's all they want to do. And they're trying to reinforce that amongst each other. So it was a nice thing, and it was a nice thing to see.
All right, so let's get to this one. And as it began, now when we got out there on Friday, the rain was coming down. It rained some again on Saturday. There was a lot of concern about that field. It's one of the worst ones in the NFL in terms of water and drainage. You know, overall, though, as the game began, it was not awful out there on the playing surface itself. And so the game begins, and you get things underway, and it was a battle in the first quarter back and forth.
I thought it was a beautiful day, you know, to start off the day, but we had prepared ourselves for it to be a bad day. And for us, mentality-wise, it was, you know, they got to play on the same field that we got to play on, so it really didn't matter. You know, it was going to be a non-factor in the game and how the result of the game was going to play out. You know, and we went out there, and we were able to get off. Went out there and got a first down, picked up a first down here and there, and wasn't able to score right away. You know, actually did a bunch of things in that first quarter, and, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, and we were to go out there on defense and stop those guys from moving the ball down the field on us and, you know, start to develop some confidence there and really felt good about our plan and really felt good about where we were as far as how we were able to stop them.
You mentioned you picked up an initial first down. You had to punt. They end up picking up a first down, but then you get a turnover, the first of a couple of turnovers on the day. In this case, they got the ball out to Josh Morgan, and Geno Hayes put the lick on him, caused the fumble. Adam Hayward fell on the ball, and you got a turnover right away.
It was nice. It was the fast part of the game we talked about. You know, the ball went out there on a screen play, and we were able to see Geno be really fast, run over there and be physical, knock the ball out. And we were able to jump on that ball with Adam Hayward, you know, one of those guys that's been in the lineup for the last couple of weeks and really been playing productively for us.
I meant to go from the very first play of that drive, because the very first play, everybody in Candlestick Park, everybody watching on TV knew Frank Gore is going to be a big factor to what they try to do early. The first play of the game, Frank Gore gets the handoff, and you're looking at me nodding because you know what's coming. Cody Grimm, number 35, is in the hole. My goodness, was he in the hole on the opening play.
You know, Cody Grimm showed up in a big way. You know, we called out front, we called out defense. Cody Grimm came down to the box and was going through his gap, and he stepped up in that gap and he made a one-on-one tackle, you know, with a premier back in this league, and gave a big-time fist bump. Second and 10, his team got behind him, kind of really, you know, jolted us, and it was a big-time lift for our team.
Okay, so they turn it over. You're not able to do much with the ball, but then again, they get it back. You kind of change the field position, and once again, you know, you're whacking Frank Gore in the run game, and your defensive line, this was a theme throughout the day, just was disrupting everything they were trying to do. Elaborate on that early.
You know, the guys played fast up front. You know, they got off the ball. They were in the backfield. They caused disruption. And when they had the opportunity to get after the quarterback, they got after the quarterback. But, you know, they really played lively, you know, especially those two interior guys and Michael Bennett being one of the new factors and the new guys out there playing, you know, primarily part of the time. And they just were active and disruptive.
All right, so they punt the ball. You end up getting the football late first quarter and start a drive that actually begins on your 20-yard line after the ball went into the end zone, and you start moving the ball. The second quarter begins, and you kind of you mix it to Mike Williams. You get some LeGarrette Blount for 12 yards. You get into position on a Freeman scramble to get inside their 20, and eventually it leads to a touchdown. Nice touchdown. It ends up being a 14-play drive over the course of the end of the first quarter, the start of the second quarter, 80 yards. You chewed up almost 8 minutes of the clock, and you put 7 points on the board.
You know, it's kind of funny. You know, it's kind of productive. You know, those are the kind of drives that defensive players like. I mean, like guys that go out there and take their time getting on the field and take away chunks of yards at a time and get down there and score a touchdown, take more time off the clock. So, you know, the best defense is on the sideline and kind of helped us out in that sense. You know, offenses, they like to go out there and get big chunks of yardage and go score fast in order to get the ball back, you know. But it helped our team out. You know, it kept us off the field on defense, and it kept those guys and wore them down a little bit as we were able to go out there and score with a nice Cadillac run up the middle.
Hey, it was third and one at the 7-yard line. You elect to go with the sneak with your big quarterback. It was about 2 feet standing down there on the line. How much were you contemplating? I got two plays here. Were you thinking that far ahead beyond the third down play?
I would have took points right there. You know, I wouldn't went for on fourth and that down. I would have, you know, took the points. It would have been a 3-0 game at that point if we would have got stopped in that short yardage play. But I really wanted a measurement to see how close it was. But it was a big yard. The officials gave me a nice, you know, hand measurement from the sideline. So I guess that meant I wasn't, no, coach, you can't measure this, but. Went with the sneak, and, you know, big Josh Freeman getting up in there and getting sneaks is always scary for me as a head coach because you never want to see a quarterback get hit.
And the touchdown play on the second and goal is, again, Cadillac kind of up the middle, finding a crease, and he had to bang in between a couple of guys there at about the 2-yard line.
You know, Cadillac's becoming a nice finisher down there in the red zone for us. You know, when he gets the ball in the red zone and he gets those handoffs, he can finish pretty well, and he gets going great. And, you know, once you get Cadillac out in a little bit of open grass and he's able to use his jump cuts and the dynamic things that he can do, he's tough to deal with.
You get them off the field again on a 3-and-out. You harass Troy Smith. This would be a theme throughout the day as he was unable to get anything going. You have to punt the ball, but they, again, can't do anything with it with about 4 minutes to go until halftime. Once again, you're getting big pressure on Troy Smith, especially on the second and third down plays. They could not get anything going, even in the second quarter, against your defense, even when it was a one-score game.
You know, one of the things that we're emphasizing this year in defense in particular is when we get a touchdown and we score, you know, the idea is to go out there and try to get Josh back the ball as quick as we can, whether it be turnover or three and out. And we were able to come up with that nice three and out right there, and that was, you know, significant for us to try to keep field position in Josh's favor and try to, in order to get points. Now, we did not go get points, but we were able to get out there and get him the ball back, so it was a small feat there. But we got a first down, moved the ball a little bit, and really put San Fran behind the eight ball in order to try to score on us in the first half.
Yeah, they were unable to get anything going there at the two-minute warning. They punt. You run it a couple of times. Clock runs down. I know that we talked to you going to intermission, and you were pleased with the overall level of play, but obviously it's only a 7-0 game, and that's, you know, your mentality going to the locker room is you got to finish.
Yes, you know, that's the whole thing. You know, you're coming out, and you tell you guys, you know, you got to go out there and let's just go execute our game plan because it's pretty good right now. You know, a couple things here on offense, a couple things here on special teams, and, you know, keep playing solid on defense, and we should be able to go home and have a nice long West Coast trip.
All right, so the second half would be the challenge. We're going to come back and talk about that. We are going to take your phone calls as well. That's coming up, and we will talk Baltimore Ravens before we're done. That is a huge matchup, NFC versus AFC, coming up in Baltimore on Sunday. We also will talk a little Thanksgiving with Coach Raheem Morris before we are done on this Monday night as well. Stay with us as we continue on with the head coach on the Buccaneers Radio Network. We'll be right back. Back in after a 21-0 victory in San Francisco that puts the Buccaneers at 7-3 and firmly in the playoff picture down the stretch run here. We're going to talk more about the Baltimore Ravens game later on in the program. We're also going to take your phone calls. Jump aboard 990-4620 in Hillsborough, Pinellas County 461-4620, 1-800-596-BUCKS, 1-800-596-BUCKS. Bucks, 2827 there to join us wherever you can hear the program outside of the Tampa Bay area, internet, wherever you are. Love to hear from you. So we left off at halftime. Let's talk a third quarter. Niners got the ball first, and they actually got a couple of first downs to start their first drive. But once again, really got no more than that. You were able to hold them up and get the football back. I know that's exactly what you wanted to do in a 7-0 game.
Yeah, as I told him at halftime, we talked about, you know, coming out the half and really starting fast and, you know, getting a three and out is what we taught it. But we ended up giving them a first down because we had a penalty on the lined off sides. And you know, you just can't hurt yourself that way. But we were able to bounce back and come around and make some plays and get off on the next third down we had opportunity to.
So they punt, and in this instance, it is downed at your six-yard line, and you start what I would call a methodical drive, a clock, you know, churning drive, not unlike what you did in the first half, where once again you get off your goal line with a pass to Kellen Winslow for 11 yards. You mix in some LeGarrette Blount. You get a couple of plays here and there. You find Maurice Stovall later on for 22 yards. You move yourself into scoring position. You're chewing up yardage and the clock.
Yep. We had a nice drive there, and we really – that's one of the drives we talked about that happened in the first half that the offense kind of gets upset with because they like an explosion play in order to get to the end zone faster. But here was the one of the times when they got down there and got stopped. You know, for me as a head coach, I'm okay with it because I can take a field goal, get easy points, but – you know, unfortunately, one of the negatives of the day, if we missed that field goal, and you know, that was, you know, one of the negatives of that drive because we kind of demoralized when you miss a field goal.
Yeah, and I know on the plane last night, Connor was a little disappointed in that because again, the field was not horrible by San Francisco's conditions, and he just pulled the thing, you know, wide left on a 41-yard attempt that he's been so good at.
You know, I got a lot of confidence in Connor, and I kick it just about anywhere with him, and the young man's coming through all year. You know, he's got 3 missed field goals, I believe, on the year. In total, and I got a lot of confidence in what he does, and I got a lot of confidence that he'll fix whatever problem he had yesterday with that field goal that he had.
All right, so the good news is after the missed field goal, again, they're stymied. They're unable to do anything. They try to get Frank Gore going again. You stuff him. You sack Troy Smith. Adam Hayward comes through there and makes the play, and you know, you force them into third and long, and they can't get a first down, and you get them right back off the field again.
You know, our defense did a good job all day. You know, they stopped the run, which was critical to do versus a guy as talented as Frank Gore. And at the same time, this is one of the better screen teams that we've seen throughout the league. You know, Frank Gore, you know, going into the game was the second, you know, leading, you know, offensive player in the league, you know, as far as yardage is concerned because of the screens and ability out the backfield. He's the leading, you know, receptor, and he was also the leading rusher, second and whatever in the league. So we knew we had to try to stop him or limit him to what he's going to be able to do. And defense did a nice job of that all day.
Yeah, and Adam Hayward, let's say something about him. Quincy Black was unable to play in this game. Here's a guy that has primarily on this team been called upon for special teams, but the last couple of weeks you're giving him a lot of playing time at linebacker out of necessity, and boy, he played from where I stood and watched, he played well yesterday, I thought.
Well, the thing, he's graded himself on the stuff that we talk about, fast, hard, smart, and consistent. And if you can go out there and have those things to grade yourself on, you have the ability to play well. You know, he goes out. He's a smart young man. He knows, you know, 3 different positions at linebacker and probably can play more if I asked him to. He goes out and he's able to, you know, have the ability and hustle. And he loves to play, you know, our brand of football, and it's starting to pay through for him. And I'm happy to see him go out there and, you know, share that Sam role with Dakota and watch both of those two young men grow.
You know, one thing I keep coming back to while we're kind of on this subject, you've had to call upon some guys in certain situations. You had to call on Ted Larson who had just come to the team right at the end of preseason to go and play left guard. You called on Cody Grimm, a seventh-round pick, to come play in the secondary. Here you call on Adam Hayward to come in a key road game at San Francisco and play virtually the entire game as a backup and as a starting linebacker. I mean, that says something. Not only for those guys, but for your coaching staff to be able to plug guys in that you might not be expecting to get a contribution from, and you get a good contribution from them.
You know, it's awesome. You know, you got to give your coaches a lot of credit for what they're able to do with these young players. You got to give the young players a lot of credit for what they're able to do with their coaches, you know, because it's a two-way street. You know, these guys got to give as much as they receive, and when able to come in and give their time and put in the extra work in order to be ready to prepare for these games. That means a lot, and it definitely shows up on Sundays, and they certainly have been doing it.
All right, so you get the ball at your 34-yard line, and you immediately make a big play, a rollout to Josh Freeman's right. He fires down the field to Mike Williams for 33 yards. I believe at your news conference a little while ago, you referred to it as an Aflac throw, as in quack, quack, wounded duck. It doesn't have a diagram, though, on the stat sheet and in the ultimate drive chart. It's just 33 yards down the field to Mike Williams and a huge play to start that drive.
You know, it was just Josh giving one of his players a chance to make a play, and it was Mike Williams, and Mike Williams certainly didn't disappoint him.
And so he comes up with the ball there, and it sets you up then for what happens next. LeGarrette Blount goes for 16 yards, another leaper coming around the right side there. I think he got hit in the backfield, bounced out to the right, and then suddenly leaped right over the top of another 49er defender that was kind of trying to come low and take his legs out, and ends up getting 16 yards on the play.
These are the drives my offensive coordinator likes. You know, he likes to have a 33-yard pass and a 16-yard leaping run by LeGarrette Blount in order to lead to a touchdown rather than the slow, methodical ones. You know, for a defensive standpoint, being a coordinator, I don't mind either one, but it's certainly a lot of fun to watch them both.
I was going to say, you watched the tape last night. I'm sure you watched it again this morning. That doesn't get dull, watching plays like that, because, I mean, he again was about 3 feet off the ground over the top of a guy at virtually full speed there.
You know, I can watch this young man play, you know, all the time. You know, he's dynamic. He does something, you know, kind of out of the box almost in every single play, whether you're talking about jumping a guy or you're talking about, you know, just being physically stronger and physically more violent than anybody. He's a big young man, and he certainly brought a lot of presence to our football team.
All right, so that leads eventually to a third and one, and on the third and one play, Josh Freeman's going to throw the ball up for Mike Williams. He told us, though, after the game that what initially happened is Jeff Fain thought he had caught the 49ers offsides and quick snapped on that play. And you know, suddenly it's kind of like a broken play almost where Freeman's just throwing it up on the one-on-one coverage on the end. Just describe what you saw on the tape.
You know, Jeff Fain did a great job of doing what we coach. And our hands are ready and we're ready to go. And somebody jumps off sides for their team. Jeff Fain snaps the ball and he throws the ball up to Mike Williams because you get a free play there. And Mike Williams makes a play. And yeah, that thing came out ugly too. But Mike Williams made an unbelievable play. There was flags all over the play. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure which play penalty they called because
called the interference.
We didn't care. We were all in celebration mode on Mike Williams catching another touchdown. And we were fired up about that.
That's a tremendous play, again, one-on-one, where the guy is literally grabbing one of his arms and yanking on his arm while he's leaping up to catch the ball.
It's about his want-to. You know, he wants to make these guys, and he wants these guys to appreciate him, and he made a play for all those guys and going out there and doing it.
All right, so the extra point good. It's 14-0 now, late third. I just wonder here, because I always love the insight from you, how does that change your mentality as the defensive play caller? What are you saying to your guys? Because you're now up two touchdowns with one quarter to go with a chance to seal this thing off. Was there any different message there, any different mentality from you dialing up the defense? What about it?
Yeah, it's definitely a different mentality. You know, you got a 14-point lead, and you're figuring they're going to have to make a strike here at some point. And it changes your first and second down calls and the things that you want to do. Now, it doesn't affect third down as much because you got to get off on third down. All things are equal at that point. But your first and second down calls certainly change in how you want to play the game.
Did you get more aggressive blitzing? Is that what you mean? What changed?
Not in your first second down. You know, you can either, you know, some people will go more aggressive to try to get after the quarterback to do some things to try to, you know, force the ball out of his hand quickly. But, you know, some people may stay with their run. So we may go with some more our traditional things. You know, we may see more Tampa 2 in that situation to make those guys, you know, dink and dunk it down the field, run out of patience, and then eventually, you know, cause an interception, mm-hmm. cause a turnover, and make those things be costly that way. So there's a couple different ways to go. And right here in the first couple of plays, I think I went with two. And I think I went with two twice in a row, and it paid off for us because we actually caught a couple passes, and he had nowhere to go with the football.
All right, so you went two, meaning Tampa two. They punt. You end up giving it back to them again on a punt, but you've got them fairly well pinned in. And then what you're talking about, be opportunistic, be ready to go, and Troy Smith is looking left, and suddenly there is 2-0 in the Tampa 2, making the play, gets the interception down the sideline and sets you up to basically put the game away.
You know, it was timely. You know, you got to figure out when you want to do it and how you want to do it. And you got to call your eight-man fronts because you still got to top Frank Gore. And you start to play a little bit more of a guessing game, so to speak, as a coordinator. But then you want to call two when you think they're going to throw the ball so you can give your DBs and your linebackers a chance to see the ball come out of Troy Smith's hands and make a play in the ball. And nobody's done it better than 20 over the years. And, you know, getting his 40th interception and 25th sack in the last couple of weeks, you know, and having the Hall of Fame call today and ask for his gloves and his jerseys, you know, is certainly a feat in his own. And I'm certainly proud of that because of who he is and what he's done and what he's meant to me. But I'm sure, you know, that I hope that's the first step of putting him in the Hall of Fame.
Let's talk a little bit more about that because you mentioned this at your news conference. The Hall of Fame from time to time will want some artifacts, memorabilia, whatever you want to talk about from a player. And they wanted Rondé's gloves, and they wanted his jersey because he is the first player in the history of the league to have 25 or more sacks and 40 or more interceptions. No one in the history of the NFL has done that. So when the Hall of Fame calls, that's pretty special.
That's really special. You know, you think about it now. There's been a lot of dominant defensive players, you know, in our league, and there's been a lot of dominant people, you know, out there doing it. So for those guys to do that, man, it's big time.
Now, typically, they sometimes ask for your shoes. I know they asked for Cadillac shoes a few years ago when he became the first rookie to start his career with, like, three straight 100-yard games. I guess 201 wanted to give up his shoes. He would give him his gloves. He would give him maybe not his game shoes. I don't know. We'll have to check with 2-0 on that. But they wanted his gloves and his jersey.
I think 2-0 would have gave up whatever they asked for, you know, and hopefully they call him for a jacket size next.
I like that line. Maybe that'll be the next. Yeah, that'll be the next thing to be looking for in terms of Hall of Fame. All right. So again, he picks it off. It sets you up with a golden opportunity after the interception down at the 7-yard line, and you get a penalty on them in the end zone that sets you up now down on the goal line. You ended up having to take a couple of timeouts down there. It leads to a 3rd and goal, and the play that a lot of Buck fans are wanting to know about, talk about. The touchdown pass to left tackle Donald Penn, a design play that's going to him in the left flat, and he catches it for a touchdown to put you up 21-0, a fun play there.
You know, Donald Penn has a lot of skills that he possesses for us. He's a left tackle. You know, he's one of those guys that's going to have a Pro Bowl candidacy this year because, you know, I don't know who's playing at a higher level than him right now at that position. You know, you have to search, you know, long and hard to try to get that. But, you know, what he's doing for us is very special, and our offensive coordinator designed a little chicanery and tabacchery for him. He lines up and he reports as a tight end. He's able to go out there and block, and to see him dominating some of the blocks, some of the things that he's doing for us this year. And we give him a hardcore play action, roll out to our left, and Josh sticks a pass on him, and Donald Penn makes an athletic move by lowering his hands and catching a big-time touchdown. And the only thing I could think about at that point was, please don't get a celebration foul.
Well, there's so many different aspects to this that are fun. The first thing is you've been practicing this for a while and have seen it in practice, and he has been waiting for the opportunity. He's been lobbying for the opportunity. But it's a far cry different when, okay, it's 3rd and goal, it's a 14-0 game, this is a big play, and you know it's coming to you, which Donald Penn had going through his own head. I talked to him after the game last night, and now you suddenly start thinking for a half second, oh, crap, okay, it is actually coming to me. I got to disguise it. I got to look like a blocker. I got to get out in the flat. I mean, there was a lot that went into that play. Did you kind of hold your breath for a half second? Were you confident all the way that was going to work?
Oh, for me, I was as confident as any play when I seen that one because I know how much time we put into it. And when you talk about Donald Penn, you can ask him all day. He can mess up 60 plays. He wasn't going to mess that one up. And I can promise you that, you know, but, you know. For him to bang it down and get out to the flat, you know, it looked like
him. Had to bend a little bit to get down and catch the ball. I mean, it's a pretty athletic play.
You know, we see him do it all the time, man. He's certainly a pat and go visitor. He'll come over into our early warm ups and catch passes from the quarterbacks. You know, he thinks he's a big time athlete, and he is. But we were proud of him.
Okay, now what was fun also after that is he's getting mobbed in the back of the end zone. You were talking about celebration penalty, and then he decides because he sees his mom and dad up in the stands. I don't know how much you know about this that he's going to try to throw it to them. And he got it most of the way there, but I think a 49er fan ended up with the ball. And then there was a big debate about whether they could get the ball from the 49er fan and whatever. And so, but I mean, that was just a fun moment. His family was there. He's from L.A., and a lot of his family had come in to see the game, and he was throwing the ball up in the stands to them.
I know he had a lot of people there that, you know, in support of him. So it was a great time to call it out in the West Coast, set up perfectly. you know, third down and one, you know, let's go with the old special play, man.
Hey, one more aspect of this. We saw some different things in this game. To go back to the first half, you ran a fake punt with Michael Spurlock, although it didn't work in that instance. You ran
– bad coaching. They overcame their bad coaching right there.
Well, but, I mean, you showed something on that you've not shown. You showed Josh Johnson in the game as a quarterback, but then you showed him split out as a wide receiver. You now throw the ball to Donald Penn. Some of this is obviously being done to say to the other teams – you better account for tricky Buccaneers here, right? Just put it out there on tape and make them have to work on it and think about it. That's part of the motivation behind that, right?
You know, for us, man, we're priding ourselves on being fun to watch. We're priding ourselves on going out and letting you know we're going to be bold and daring. And we're going to do whatever it takes to win football games. You've seen us kick an onside kick this year. You've seen us be versatile. Flea flickers, reverses. You know, we have all those things in our package, you know, pass the Donald Penn. You know, whatever it takes, we're going to go out there and try to win games. Roy Millen going on goal line and just leading the blast. We're going to use all our men, you know, all 53 men on deck. Here we go. Let's put it all out there.
But, I mean, some of it is tactical. You want the other team to be thinking about, okay, wait a minute, Josh Johnson's in the game. What's going to happen here? You want them thinking about Donald Penn's on the end of the line of scrimmage. They might throw it to him again.
They got to have a plan. You know, you better have a plan for Josh Johnson, you know, because he's certainly dynamic and he's one of our better playmakers. You better have a plan for Donald Penn in that formation, and you better have a plan for – you know, just
Roy Miller.
That we're going to do. Roy Miller on the goal line. You better have a plan for, you know, all the things that we're doing right now. Flea flickers and whatever else we've been doing, man. We've been doing a great job of, you know, mixing some of this stuff in, and it's fun.
Okay, so you're up 21-0, and I could see it over on that sideline. The first unit D and you, everybody still focused, still sending the first unit D out there wanting to get the shutout, and you're able to shut down Troy Smith and company for the last couple of plays, and you get the shutout and get to walk off of Candlestick Park not only with a win, but with a 21-0 victory with the defense capping it off.
You know, the funny part is I don't know if we were sitting there, you know, putting the first unit out there and with the intent to get the shutout. It just so happens we only got one old guy that we did sit down on the side with us, and it was Rondae Barber. And we were able to send some of our other guys out there and get a chance to play. And you know, all the rest of those guys are babies, so they need the experience as well. So they were out there to cap off a game. That's a part of the lessons that we got to learn as a young team. And it was one more opportunity for our guys to go out and finish off a game in a two-minute, and they were able to go do it.
Yeah, they did. It's a 21-0 win. I was outside the door, the closed door of that locker room, and there was a lot of roaring in there. I know you were doing Victory Monday, Victory Tuesday. But, I mean, that had to be a blast in that locker room with the door closed.
No, it was great, man. You know, the fourth second-half shutout of the year. You know, the first shutout, I think, for us since 2004. And if I'm correct, I believe number 99 was here in 2004. And now with McCoy emerging, we're starting to see the importance of that position. Some of those things, you know, first time you get a win out there and since 1980, you know, half of my players were just born. Probably one, maybe.
Half your players? I don't know that half of them were just born.
Well, there you go. And, and we established some things that we need to get done, and it's been a lot of fun.
The wild stat, too, that they kept quoting to us last night, the last time the 49ers had been shut out at home was 1977, and Steve DeBerg was the quarterback, which is a wild story in and of itself.
And now they're getting close to my age. I was one.
In 1977. Well, listen, a sweet win, that's for sure. We're going to talk more about it. We're going to talk a little Thanksgiving. We're going to talk a little Baltimore Ravens before we're done. Much more with head coach Raheem Morris, including your phone calls, 990-4620 in Hillsboro, 461-4620 in Pinellas, 1-800-596-BUCKS, wherever you can hear us. Stay with us as we continue with the head coach Raheem Morris on a Monday night on the Buccaneers Radio Network.
Show rolls on. This is 620 WDAE and US 1035, the home of Buccaneers football.
Buccaneers at 7-3 will play the Baltimore Ravens on this Thanksgiving weekend. More on that coming up. Still savoring a 21-0 win in San Francisco, a fourth road win of 2010, by the way. A couple of more accolades before we get to the phones. Jeff Fain played in his 100th career game. Kellen Winslow, 70 straight games now with a catch in his career. You may not even know this stat. When you don't turn the ball over as the Buccaneers, since I believe the beginning of 2002, I think it is, 21-2 when you don't turn it over. So a lot of credit to that. And you're still playing a lot of young guys, too. Once again, I mean, you played 11 or more rookies in the game again yesterday for the fifth straight game while winning these games.
Those are awesome numbers. Those are awesome achievements. All those guys going out there and do those things, you know, the turnover stats, you do know. You know, if you don't turn the ball over, you got a great chance to win. And that's part of the young development of that quarterback, you know, possessing the football and maintaining possession.
All right. And, again, one more overall thought for those just tuning in before we go to the phones on going out there and getting a shutout over the 49ers to set yourself up for the stretch run.
You know, just all about the wins, you know, and that's all we really care about. And that's what we try to stress to our football team. You know, the shutout is great. You know, some of those stat things that people talk about, they're all nice. But, you know, really, what is all said and done, man, is all I want to know what your win-loss record was.
And 7-3 looks awful good right now. We go to the phones. Let's begin with Mike in Brandon. You're on with head coach Raheem Morris. Good evening.
Good evening. How you doing, Coach?
How you doing, Mike? Doing well.
I'm doing well. I'd like to thank you, first of all, for making me look like a genius and lining my pockets a little bit, because I've been telling people since the beginning of the season this team was going to be good. Ever since that New Orleans game last year, man, I saw you guys had something going.
Yeah, I always get angry about the New Orleans game, Mike. They try not to give us credit for that one. They try to say the Saints rested their players, and you know, I played in that game.
Who
and I
was, says that?
I coached in that
Obviously,
game.
Obviously, no one that watched the game
I
says
see
that.
I didn't see anybody resting.
Yeah. They were still trying to lock up home field advantage, as I recall, and we're playing everybody tooth and nail. Go ahead, Mike. Sorry. Go ahead.
No problem. I just want to know, Coach, what are you doing to prepare this team for dealing with success? Because dealing with failure is hard, but sometimes dealing with success can be harder. And I just like to say I'm going to be there at all the games. I've been there for the past 16 years, and I'll be there screaming my head off, Coach.
You know,
thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Mike. But dealing with success is the same way as dealing with failure. You know, it's about how you judge yourself and what you're doing. And it's the stuff that we talk about every week, that formula that I give every week. Play fast, check. Play hard, check. Play smart, check. And play consistent. So now you got to do that throughout the whole building. And talking about with meetings. You're talking about with practice. You're talking about when you go eat lunch. When everything you do off the field, on the field, regardless, you got to put a check mark next to all four of those things. And that's how you deal with success, because the more success you have, you know, the more talk radio shows you have to do. So you got to know if you're playing fast, hard, smart, and consistent every time you go out. You know, you can't leave anything off to chance. It's got to be those things. It's what you got to do. We're developing a hungry team. You know, they want to become a lasting contender, and the only way you can do that if you go through that checks and balances with yourself every single day.
But he makes a good point. I mean, a year ago, you were battling to keep the confidence level at all at 0-7 and 1-12, obviously. Now you're completely 180 degrees in the opposite direction. Don't get the big head. Don't think you've arrived. Don't let it affect your preparation during the week or your thought process during the game. It's a different, a completely opposite dynamic now.
You know, you can't have a big head, so to speak, you know, but it certainly is a mentality versus a reality. You know, you got to play and think like a champion, and that's the only way you become a champion. You know, when you go out every day to practice, to play and think like a champion means going out preparing like that. So the preparation definitely kicks in and all those things, and it just has to be one of those things where you can go out and be your very best self. You know, I always say it, you know, we're not going to throw pool parties when we get victories. We're not going to throw pool parties when we have a good practice. We're going to go out and work and prepare ourselves for the next game, our next challenge.
There may be some pool parties down the road, but not yet. Walter in Tampa is next with head coach Raheem Morris. Good evening, Walter.
How you doing, TJ? How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing well, Walter. How you doing, man?
All right. I want to congratulate you all for being our coach. You're one of the best ever. And I want to ask you a question. When Coach Dungy was here, it seemed like he had all coaches under him that was good teachers. And it seemed like you're following the same pattern. And also, General Manager Mark Dominic made a comment that he had took all of the skills from all of the GMs. He had seemed like McKay and the last GM we had. And it seemed like you guys are doing really good. And the main point I want to make, all your coaches are good teachers. I think you're a good teacher. When you left and came back, it was a drop-off when you left. When you came back, they pick back up, and I think that's teaching as well as coaching.
You know, Walter, I always pride myself in saying that. You know, I always say coaching is teaching. You know, it's the same thing. You know, it's no different than, you know, what a classroom teacher does in his preparation and how he presents it. You know, you got to have different methods. I try to get it across to your players. And a lot of my coaches, if not all of them, have the same type of methods. You know, Pete Mangurian used the same type of methods with the O-line. You know, Jimmy Lake used the same type of methods with the defensive backs. There's no better teacher and presenter than Rich Bisaccia. You know, Greg Olsen has the same type of deal with his offensive staff and everything he's able to do. You know, and all our guys use those type of teaching skills and those type of teaching styles. And you got to find your way and find your niche. You know, some guys are grass coaches. You know, some guys are board coaches, and some guys are PowerPoint or whatever the case may be, and how you're going to teach your lesson plan that day. And you got to have all different types in order to go out and do it that day in order to be a great coach. You know, I watched, you know, Todd Wash go out with the D-line, and he presents with a PowerPoint magnetic system that gets these guys to cross and gets those guys to know exactly what to do. Then he's able to take it to the grass because you have different types of learners in your room. You know, and all the great teachers can tell you that across the country. You got to find a method that works best for each player.
Well, whatever his method was this week, bottle that up, because good Lord, did they get after the 49ers on the D-line.
Certainly did, and proud to see it.
Mark is in Lakewood Ranch. You are up next with the head coach, Raheem Morris.
The only resting I saw in that New Orleans game was a bunch of pouty faces from the New Orleans Saint fans resting their chins in their hands.
I agree,
well
Mark.
Well put.
But I have to man up first, because the guy sitting next to you, TJ, he mans up all the time, wants his guys to. I'm really glad to call you TJ instead of Chris this week, TJ. I don't know what the old man in me was having to call
fine.
That. So
no problem.
I wanted to man up to you. But I just love the way our guys – and good morning good afternoon, Coach.
Hey, good afternoon to you.
But I do have a couple things I want to say. First one is I just love the way our guys went to the Bay Area, took to their house, went in the refrigerator, left not even the olives – left him a good turkey goose egg, and brought the loot, like the Buccaneers that we are, of looting their city and taking the win back to here. Because like the kid said, our young man said, that's the QB, look out, NFL cities, we're coming to you.
Yeah.
And that was just great, and congratulations. And I got one observation and a question. My two stats that I look at is Barber said was the OTD off of third down, and my other one is BHP. And it happened on the first quarter in the 11th minute mark when we got out of a third down, and one of the young men pulled a BHP, and he turned and looked at you. You said nothing other than, what were you thinking?
What is BHP here? Clue us in.
Yeah, I will clue you in. Because the very next play, I'm military. I did 20 years and a trigraph abbreviations. The next one was an SLD, the bonehead play.
The bonehead play
of pushing the quarterback out. That is what I look at every Buck game, is OTD and BHP. And this was the first one. And you guys turned around. The very next play was SLD. You seeked, located, and destroyed. Because the very next play was a fumble. And that I'm just jumping up and down going, this is just absolutely
okay.
Great.
Let's clarify here so that the audience knows what we're talking about. He's talking about in the first quarter when Adam Hayward got the personal foul that kept the drive alive. That's the BHP, right, Mark, that we're talking about. And then what was the other one? The seek, destroy. That was creating the fumble right after that. That's maturity, though, from your football team.
No, I'm with you. The thing you got to do is remain unwavered throughout all the whole process. You know, through the BHP and through the SLD, you got to have the ability to remain unwavered and to go out and to create your own fortune. You know, if we'd have sat there and griped on the BLD, we would have had problems with the next couple of plays, and they probably could have went on to score for us.
I think I'm law. You're looking for the WIN. Well, is what you're looking for.
You know, for me, I'm bilingual, so I can talk with Mark all day. Mark, you know, whatever you like to do, military talk.
Seek and destroy. That's like the old Marvin Hagler if you start talking boxing. When you play defense, seek and destroy, I like that.
You know, well, I'm with him, so you know,
they went in and stole everything but their olives. I love that.
Wow. You know, I would have took the olives too, Mark. But you know, but if you want me to leave the olives, I will.
Roderick is in St. Pete. He is next with us here with the head coach here on a Monday night. Roderick,
hey, what's up, guys? How you guys doing today?
I'm doing well, Roderick. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Coach. Hey, I want to piggyback on what an earlier caller said about you and your teaching. You know, actually, I was watching a game a couple weeks ago, and they did a little. I guess a little segment on you, on your post game speech to the team. And, I'm an ex player too. I played at Portland State with Adam Hayward. And, it's like, you know, I got fired up. I got ready to play just listening to you talk, you know. And, you know, if you were my coach, I'd give you 110, you know, just by the way you are and your demeanor. So I appreciate that. You know, it's a great day to be a Buck fan right now. And, I'm really happy about what's going on. But I also want to say that it's kind of You know, I'm noticing that this team, we don't have any superstars. You know, everybody just lines up and play. And I'm trying to figure out where is this coming from, you know, and the only thing I can do is point back to the coach. You're getting ready to play. You know, you're getting them ready to play. You're motivating them. You got them thinking the right things, coach. And, you know, I'm quite sure I'm speaking for a lot of fans here in the Tampa Bay. We really appreciate you. And I'm not going to – I know you're not going to say it, but I'm going to say it. Glazers, it's time to start talking contract extension for this guy.
Roderick acting as an agent, too, here for you. All right, so what do you want to say about what he's saying about, you know, you instilling belief in your team?
You know, Roderick, it's really more about brutal honesty with you guys and talking to them and be able to get the point across that you want to get across. And then being able to deliver a message and to inspire people. You know, you said you would give me 110, and I'm going to ask you for a little bit more because I think you got more in you. Because right now you just focused a goal and you gave yourself a spot where you're going to stop at. And I'm trying to tell my guys that there is no reason to stop. You know, if we listen to anybody tell us at the beginning of the year, we would have had 4 wins right now and we'd have been very comfortable with it and shut it down for the rest of the season. But, you know, right now for me, the race to 10 is a quest. And then after that, we're seeking in, you know, SLD and whatever you want to call it. And we're going to go out and try to get the rest of them as well. So, you know, everybody just sit back and watch and have fun and enjoy us. And I'm fired up to be here with you guys.
Again, you can join us on the phones, 990-4620 in Hillsboro, 461-4620 in Pinellas, 1-800-596-BUCKS outside the area. We'll get back to the phones in just a second. You said something, though, at your news conference a little while ago before the live radio show began about the whole race to 10 thing. When you started that with your team, it was the belief that 10 wins generally puts you in the playoff picture, in the division hunt. And then somebody started asking you, you know, as the media will do, well, what about if 10 doesn't get you there? Well, the logical follow-up is you're trying to get to 11, 12, whatever it takes. The 10 was the number at the very beginning of the year that you set out for, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's the be-all, end-all. It's what you were talking about.
Well, at the beginning of the year, the first, you know, before you start any game, you say race to 10. You know, you're saying, hey, let's get the 10 faster than anybody else. You know, and that could be the first 10 games. Then after that, you got to figure out what you need. You know, and right now we're in a race. We're in a race, and we're still trying to get there, but it has to go one at a time. And the most important game is the Baltimore Raven game going up there this weekend.
We will talk more about them in a couple of moments. We go all the way out to San Diego. We were in San Francisco. We go to San Diego, and that's where Phil is listening in tonight on the Raheem Morris Show. Hello, Phil.
How you doing, TJ? How you doing, Coach?
Hey, Phil. How you doing? I'm doing great.
I'm pretty good. I feel great with you. First off, I just have a quick comment and a couple of questions. I just want to congratulate you for the success of the Tampa Bay Bucks. And I do admire your coaching style and approach towards your players. I just have a quick question here. You know, how do you handle disciplinary actions to your players and motivate players that might be off their game? And a quick question regarding Josh Freeman. Has he ever thrown with a glove on cold weather, or if that's even a factor? And one more question. What do you think of B-Train as opposed to LeGarrette Blount's new nickname on that field? And just want to say good luck to you in Baltimore and happy Thanksgiving, brother. And keep it going.
Thanks, Phil. I appreciate that, man.
So he went in a couple of different areas. He said first about disciplining your guys and handling things internally.
As far as discipline, you know, you got to make them all accountable. That's the first thing. And the way you make them all accountable in our league usually comes through your wallet a lot of the time. And I've been fortunate enough, you know, to be here the last couple of years, and anything that I do discipline-wise with our players, the money that I find them, however much it is, and, you know, obviously the fine is going to, you know, fit the punishment and be according my ownership and everybody, my management team, they all signed off to be able to use that money, whatever I use, to mull my community-related ideas. And Marae Holmes does a nice job of packaging some things together, and she takes all those. We brought a young lady a car last year. We were able to give out book scholarships to people last year because of players being disciplined. And it's something that it used as motivation, and then we make them follow their money. So not only do you have to pay your fine, you have to go out in the community and serve it. So at the same time, while you're paying for it, you got to go out there and feature it and be able to give the car away or give the book scholarships away.
Interesting.
And do all the different things with the community, because that's the most important thing, and how you're received and how you're how you interact with your own people. And that was important to me. It was important to my guys, and it was a way to go out there and motivate, and also a way to go out there and get all of us to go out there. And You'll be shocked, man. You know, half the guys, they don't even get in trouble. They just volunteer to do things. And, you know, Rondae Barber followed somebody else's money around. So it was great.
Quickly, Freeman using a glove on his throwing hand. I don't know that he's ever done that. It was freezing cold in the game against Atlanta in the last regular season game last year, and he didn't have gloves on his hand.
And I don't know if he will, but I certainly see him throw with a glove before or try all those new things that they have for the NFL, but I don't know if he ever needed it.
And the other thing is LeGarrette Blount being the B train after you had the A train, Mike Allstott. You like that nickname?
Blount
being the B train?
He's got a bunch, you know. You know, Grella's been telling a bunch for his man, our PR director. He's awesome. You know, Blount Trauma Force and, you know, all the other stuff they've been saying.
Blount Instrument. B train, though, Allstott was the A train, Grella wasn't here. Allstott was the A train and Blount's now the B train. You kind of like that.
Yeah, but, you know, again, man, you know, you talk about Mike Allstott.
There's only one A train.
Legendary figure. Still legendary here. You got to let Blount get a couple more games on this belt first.
Michael in Tampa, as we go quickly here, you're on with head coach Raheem Morris. Hey.
I really, really appreciate you, as everybody, it seems like, in the entire state of Florida does, coach. You're doing one hell of a job, I must say, Mr. Morris. How many different schemes and plans are there? And is there a set for the offense and a set for the defense? And what is it, 200 or 300 different reads and all that stuff that you guys got to go through? And how do you instill all that knowledge into these guys? I swear, it's amazing.
All right, Michael.
You know, Michael, it's actually fun to go through the process for us, man. We, you know, every week you go through and you put together a game plan and you go out and you practice and you execute in different situational football. And, you know, a lot of that, Michael, comes from the off-season training. A lot of that comes from training camp. A lot of that comes from the stuff that we do before we even face an opponent. So we're able to go out there and put those things together so the players can have some recall from somewhere on something that we've done before in the past. And these guys are doing a nice job of coming out and executing what we're asking them to do. And it's been a lot of fun. You know, there's the key, though, Michael, that I always try to explain to people, but I'll give it to you. You know, the different things that we do on defense, you know, may look different, may look like 100 different sets, but if you can put it into your core beliefs, and that's what I really believe Tampa 2 was, you know, it's the language that everybody speaks. It's the ability for everybody to be on the same page as far as what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And those are the things that made Tampa 2 defense great. It wasn't the actual call, Tampa 2. It was the ability for Brooks, Saps, Lynch, the Barbers, the Brian Kellys, the Dwight Smiths, the Dexter Jacksons, the Hardy Nickersons, all to be on the same page all the time.
It's the whole idea. Bo is in Tampa. He's going to be our last caller of the night with head coach Raheem Morris on this Monday. Hey, Bo.
Hey, good afternoon, coach, and good afternoon, evening. My question to you, by the way, first off, number one, congratulations on a heck of a season.
Hey, thanks, Bo. Appreciate that.
Hey, my question to you is that is about Josh Freeman. You saw something in him in college that really made you move up to get him in the draft. I really admire his work ethic. That when you did draft him, he came in here in the off season and really worked with you there at the at One Buck Place. But what was it that really, you know, set you back in your chair and said this is our guy?
Well, you know, when I went out there and I was with him at Kansas State for a while, and I seen the process for him there. You know, coming as a freshman, becoming our starter, and once he got to the game, and I was defensive coordinator. I felt like I had a chance to win every single game when he was out there playing quarterback for us. And once I became head coach, you know, of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and sat down with Mark Dominic and our management team and our ownership, and I said, you know, the teams that win, and they win for a long term, you know, they got one thing in common. They all got a quarterback. You know, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees. You know, you can go back as far as you want to go. Dan Marino, John Elway, whoever you're talking about. Those guys play for 10 years, and they have winning seasons every single year because of those guys. And I want to go get us a stud. I wanted to go get us a clutch closer. I wanted to get us a guy that's going to be in MVP chatter every year. I wanted to get us a guy that's going to be in Pro Bowl talks every year. And I believe that's what we did with our selection when we picked Josh Freeman. Now, of course, it wasn't a popular pick at the time. But to watch this young man develop and grow into what he's become, I couldn't be more pleased. And I'm sure the town couldn't be more.
I think the biggest thing, the two things that strike you right now, leadership with him, because, I mean, these guys are following him. They will follow him into a burning building right now. I mean, that's the leadership. And he's not making mistakes. And you can't emphasize enough that young quarterbacks tend to make a lot of mistakes. Your young quarterback is not doing that.
Well, I think our young football team, they all understand at the work that he puts into it. And he's accountable to all those guys to be on the details of everything. You know, so when Josh Freeman says something to our offensive field, our offensive team, they all listen because they know he might have looked at something more than I did, and they want to make sure. And, you know, he's out there. They're going to win because of him, not in spite of him. And they understand that. And you know, these guys go out and they do a great job for him. You know, and it spreads across to the defense side of the ball now too. You know, when Styles G. White look up and see Freeman go out there and score, his next time out, he's going to rush a little bit harder because he wants to give him the ball back a little bit faster in order to do some things. And we know how much he hates practice. And
he's putting that out there because Styles has come in the room. You're just getting that extra little stick in there just so the fans know what's going on behind the scenes on a radio
show. I watch Styles practice harder when he sees Josh Freeman practicing harder.
I like that. We need to pause. We're going to come back, and we'll quickly talk Thanksgiving. We'll talk Baltimore Ravens, and then it'll be Styles' turn with Dave Moore on Buccaneers Total Access. That's after we're done tonight on the Buccaneers Radio Network. We'll be right back.
The Rahi Morris Show on your home for the Buccaneers, 620 WDAE and US 103.5. Once again, Buccaneers head coach Rahi Morris and your host, TJ Reeves.
We'll move quickly here. Thanksgiving week. We're going to talk Ravens in just a second, so you'll adjust the schedule a little bit. Playing on the road, but you'll speed things up and go earlier on Thursday so people can enjoy Thanksgiving a little bit too. I know it's a special time for families.
It won't be much different for us. You know, our guys all year have been used to change, used to different elements, and we've been doing it a lot this year. You know, practice at the Trop, you know, practice early on Thursdays. We'll just have an earlier practice on Thursday this week. You know, it gives me an opportunity to go get back to community because I know I'm going to have somebody walk in 1 minute late, and I can't wait to take their money in order to give back to the community.
All right. Quickly for Thanksgiving, what has to be on the table in addition to the turkey? Do you have to have – what else? Greens, beans, yams, you know, sweet potatoes, what?
For me, less about the food. It's more about the people. You know, we get a chance to go home and see our families. It's always good to be around. You know, I have to make a couple trips around Tampa because I got more than one family in Tampa. Mm-hmm. You know, not only include my mother and father – you got to go see your friends, and you know, all those guys are considered family as well.
All right. Do you have any role in preparation of Thanksgiving or only in consumption? Do you cook anything? No?
No, I do nothing.
Nothing? All right.
Nothing
just
of
checking.
The sort when it comes to cooking anything.
You're worried about the Ravens. We got about 90 seconds left. They don't need a whole lot of buildup. Obviously, one of the better teams in the NFL and in the AFC. You're going to their house, and here we go. What jumps out?
You know, the last memory I have in playing the Ravens was 2002, you know, when watching Ray Lewis come out of that tunnel. Yeah, it was an impressive sight. Now, we got to win that day, but he certainly was all over the field, and he tried to smash us. And, you know, I can't wait to go back out there and compete again because it's going to be a physical, you know, primetime game that you want to be in. And it's a great place to go, and it's a great place to be. Playing relevant games this time of year.
Is what you and the do. League, you keep saying impossible to ignore, and the league has now taken notice and moved the next two games to 4-15 that says something. Flacco in that offense, they got some receivers, they got Ray Rice, they got McGahee. There's going to be some challenges.
Yeah, man, tough team. You know, and like I said, we're going to look at the tape, we'll evaluate, we'll respect them all, but we'll fear none, and we'll be ready to play.
All right, so we'll get ready to head to Baltimore. Listen, happy Thanksgiving. Enjoy it at 7-3. Be thankful for a lot of things, but Coach, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, there's the head coach, Raheem Morris. And I want to say thanks also to Jerry Petuck and Jeff Ryan helping me out with the show here. We get ready for the matchup in Baltimore. Again, that game has moved to a 4:15 game. We'll be on the air 3 o'clock with the network pregame show from Baltimore. On behalf of all of us at the Buccaneers Radio Network, happy Thanksgiving this week. We'll talk to you from Baltimore. Dave and Styles up next on Total Access. We'll talk to you next Monday night with the head coach. Good night.
You've been listening to the Raheem Morris Show on 620 WDAE and US 103.5, the home of Buccaneers football.